We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Today's episode is brought to you by the folks over at SeatGeek, the best and easiest to use ticket platform out there. They take the confusion out of buying tickets using a 0 to 10 scoring system and a green is good, red is bad color rating system so you and your loved ones get the best deal possible. So whether it's going to see our beloved Red Legs at Great American Ballpark, the Bengals over at Paycor, FC Cincinnati, one of the area college teams, or pretty much anything in between, use promo code RIVERFRONT at checkout and receive $20 off your first order. Click the link in the show notes to download the app and get started. That's Riverfront, one word, for $20 off.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Bengals Show presented by the Riverfront. Hope you are all having an excellent, fantastic week. Living in the afterglow, the Bengals' third straight victory over the Seattle. Wow. Try that again. San Francisco 49ers. They're not the Seattle 49ers. That would be really, really weird. Man. Anyway, alongside me, as usual, is my good friend, hopefully yours, Greg Niemann. Greg, how are you, my good man?
Fantastic. Coming off a W. It's all good.
Heck yeah. And that was, I mean, and it, I talked about it a little bit on the quick live show Sunday night. It really wasn't even as close as the score. Yeah, things got a little bit hairy when before the Pratt interception. They were coming down to possibly tie the game, but Bengals left a lot of points on the field. I mean, at least 10 points. They were on the 3 when Irv Smith fumbled and Burrow took that sack on third down that made the kick that McPherson missed a 50-yarder instead of something, you know, a little more makeable in the 40s. So, before we get going here, again, subscribe to our, if you guys are on Facebook, facebook.com/RiverfrontCincy. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you guys are watching this, you should be subscribed anyway. Click like, smash like, hit, like, beat the crap out of like. You know how it works. Wow. This is an awesome start. 2 minutes and 16 seconds in, and I cannot speak the English language. I might just have to have you take over, Greg, and I'll just be here just smiling and making weird facial expressions.
YouTube. We don't want that.
YouTube.com/RiverfrontCincy. There we go. Wow, they are so proud of me.
We're getting better every moment.
I mean, it's this is why we get paid the big bucks, and yeah, we actually do this for free because we love the game. Real quickly, again, you know, we went live after the game on Sunday, so we kind of did a quick recap. Greg, what are your thoughts since you weren't here on Sunday's game, first on offense?
I thought that it was just a dominating performance. I thought you really, the biggest key to me was Joe Burrow being able to go under center and move fluidly. I thought that opened up Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon, I think this style fits what Joe Mixon can do. Joe Burrow from under center. That allows Mixon. It's just a totally different run game for the running back, especially. Joe Mixon was downhill out of when they were under center. He was able to get a downhill start, and that's kind of what Joe Mixon is at this point. He's not really a make-you-miss guy, but if he can get rolling downhill and kind of slide off tackles, and all of a sudden those 2 and 3 yard gains turn into 4, 5, and 6, I thought that really fit Joe Mixon's game. And, of course, Joe Scheisty, 28 of 32, yeah, that's going to get the job done. So I thought it was a dominating performance. Really not a whole lot you can say about the Bengals that was too terribly bad, and I think gives the Bengals a lot of promise moving forward.
Yeah, he threw only 4 incompletions out of 32 passes, and one of those was a flat-out drop by Drew Sample. Just on the target, there was one throw that I can remember that was a miss, and I think more than anything, it was miscommunication. It was in the first quarter, actually, but one of his first passes. I think he thought Jamar Chase was going to sit down on a route when Chase actually, I think Joe missed it. Like he threw the wrong route, whereas Chase broke inside because that's how the defensive back was going to play him. But outside of that, everything was on target. Everyone was making plays all over the field. He got everybody involved. I mean, Trenton Irwin made a couple of key catches. Our boy Yoshi caught another touchdown pass. Apparently, he's just a red zone target right now, and with his size and strength, and he's apparently has a knack for, I don't say scramble drill, but just getting open, finding a way to get himself open and making himself a target in the end zone, which is incredibly key, when especially when you don't have a tight end to throw to you down there. So you've got a big target. Tyler Boyd had touchdown catch, beautiful pass by Burrow. I absolutely just landed it in a bucket over his shoulder. T. Higgins had a good game, his best game that he's had in a handful of weeks. And Jamar Chase is Jamar Chase, 10 catches, 100 yards. And just everybody contributed. It's the best I think Joe Mixon has looked all season. Again, like he still hits the hole hard. If he's able to get to speed by the time he hits the line, I mean, he absolutely blasted the line. You saw a few times in the second half. I don't know if they were trying something different, but they tried to run him outside a little more and get his feet going side to side. And that doesn't work. That's when the run game started to bog down and the offense slowed down a little bit. It seemed like they went under center a lot less in the second half, which I'm curious why. You know, it's again, I have no complaints over Zach Taylor's play calling this week, but it's more of just curious that was working. Obviously you can't stay in one, you know, you can't be under center every snap and you can't stay in shotgun every snap, but they kind of went away with what was working really well and the offense kind of suffered a little bit, but then that, you know, they were able to get going again, especially on the quick field position change on the turnovers. So that was the best team effort on offense they've had this year. And it playing against 49ers defense, that 49ers offense, they're missing a couple guys. Purdy was dinged up. That defense was whole. It broke the Niners. They went out and had to spend a third rounder to go get Chase Young. So
get that. Niners got better with that one.
But how much better? Like they have good. I mean, it's more than anything, I guess, just more bodies. But it's not as if they were lacking pass rush juice. It's
no,
you know, I guess it's just moving each guy down a spot so that, you know, a guy in the rotation, you know, you're not bringing someone like Joe Osai who's absolutely doing nothing on pass rush next, you know. So
we've talked about it before. D line, you know, depth is something you can never have enough of. So yeah, Niners had to do that a little bit.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it only cost them a third rounder. I thought that was so weird. Montez Sweat, who these are both guys on expiring contracts. I think pretty much everybody would agree that Chase Young is the better player than Montez Sweat, wouldn't you?
I mean, I would say yes, but I don't think there's a gross disparity. I think Montez Sweat, you have a little less baggage. I think Chase Young is a little bit of a show, you know,
being the second injury history too.
Yeah. And being the second overall pick, it just comes with a lot of clout, where you bring Montez Sweat in. There's not really, your fan base isn't going to be, worried about Chase Young and how he feels and what's this. And are we resigned? I just think Montez Sweat's a little bit of a more low key kind of play, than Chase Young. Both really good players.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they'd help pretty much any defensive line room. I just thought it was surprising that Montez Sweat got the better draft pick.
Yeah.
What are the Bears doing?
I have no idea. I mean, literally no idea. Why would you? I have nothing. There's no words to describe why they would do this. Okay, first off, you're horrendous.
Yeah.
Second off, you have your backup quarterback, a Division II guy, that's playing. Like, what are you buying for? And they've done this a couple years in a row, and it has not worked. They bought Chase Claypool. That was obviously ignorant. I like Montez Sweat, but is Montez Sweat going to help the Bears win games? Is he going to be a game changer for them? No. Unless he has 10 sacks a game, he's not going to help the Bears win more than they have. I have no idea why they would do this, give up a draft pick when they need as many as they can get.
Yeah, it's weird because at least Claypool had another year on his contract. Montez Sweat has 9 or 10 games left. I don't know if they've had their bye yet, but and then he's a free agent. And unless you have a deal in place to extend him, what's gonna like his? And I don't think his agent should let them extend him right now. I've seen some headlines that they're actually talking about a contract extension. I think that's a dumb idea by their side, if that's what they decide to do. Bears aren't going to be good next year. You can hope maybe by 2025 they can get things in order. But you're kind of hoping a lot for an organization that hasn't shown you anything in a long, long time. Let him hit the open market. If the Bears offer him more than what he's getting anywhere else, sign him. Great. But it doesn't make any sense. That draft pick, I mean, that's almost another first round pick because they're going to be drafting the top of the draft. So that's going to be pick number 35, 34 or 36, somewhere in that range. Like that's where the Bengals got T. Higgins was at 33. Yeah. You're giving that up for a guy who's going to be with you for half a year. It's absolutely just doesn't make any sense. And again, I at least kind of understood Chase Claypool because they had they had DJ Moore, who clearly wasn't happy there, and no other receivers. Now that's not the guy I would have traded for because Claypool's a head case and kind of an asshole, but I at least kind of got it because he had another year. But after that, biting them in the ass, and then they go out and double down and do it again. Like, what? They're a hot mess. They had to fire the running backs coach and have security there with them. Like, they had the second issue they've had with something like that this year. They have no idea what's going on there. And I'm not a Bears fan, not from Chicago, don't really care. So it's just fun to watch dysfunction from other organizations aren't at Paycor.
It's a train wreck. There's no doubt about that.
Who's at the head? I mean, obviously Ryan Poles is going to be out of a job. They're going to need a new head coach, and somebody above them just needs to kind of get their stuff together. I just don't. Oh well. Again, fun to watch the other organizations, not your own. So Bengals have rare stability, and while that's has its drawbacks because they're more slower to change cultures and things like that. I mean, we saw the trade deadline. We'll go into that here in a little bit, but it's nice to know what you're getting from the top down. So anyway, time to give away some awards. Always bopping, Joe Esposito. Who do you think should win the Joe Esposito Award for this past week against San Francisco?
This is such a tough call. I don't know. I'm trying to think of anybody. Was there anybody for the Bengals that played well you can think of? Or
I don't know. Robbins?
I think
he's coming back to earth. Like he's becoming like an actual average, decent punter. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, you can go that way, but I think I'm going to put my vote in for Joey B. 28-32, just absolutely that guy. If you remember him, maybe you guys have heard of him. He plays football. He's an Ohio kid, plays football. You might have heard of him, but 28-32, absolutely just a clinical performance. I mean, it really was. You felt like AFC championship kind of performance. I mean, from where we were 3 weeks ago with the Bengals and what was happening with the franchise and the injury and all that stuff to where we are now, it almost doesn't feel possible. You went from a place where the Bengals are ranked in the bottom five in every offensive category to a place where they just put up 31 on the road against the Niners with a missed field goal and a fumble at the 3 yard line by a person I will not name.
I will name him because I have to, but I, you know, we'll get to him in a second. And again, yeah, I mean, that's a game that the Niners haven't lost at home in over a calendar year. I think it was 11 straight, including playoffs, and Bengals just controlled the game from the start. I mean, again, I mean, it wasn't a butt kicking, but I mean, that defense is loaded with Pro Bowlers, yep. Pro Bowlers, and All Pros, and they looked ordinary. I really don't recall Fred Warner's name being mentioned. Dre Greenlaw was only seen a couple of times when he was absolutely run over by Joe Mixon on a run, and you see his back turned in coverage, and you know, and missing plays that way. And that's you know, you Nick Bosa only had 2 hits; he didn't have a sack or anything like that. So it's Burrow. I mean, again, that's what the offense is supposed to look like. Joe Burrow absolutely looked like he was back. 19 straight completions at one point. The Bengals record is 20 by Kenny Anderson, who's, oh, by the way, pretty good and should be in the Hall of Fame. Almost got the record. It ended up having to throw it away. Zach Taylor said that next time, if he has a shot at it, he's going to call up a really, really difficult, you know, some kind of deep pass so that Burrow has to earn the team record. So that was kind of funny. So, but with the good comes the bad. What's that?
To each their own, I guess. I'd be giving up a nice little dump off, but whatever.
I'm pretty sure he was joking around, but yeah. Again, it Burrow's still going to, you know, third deep pattern, Burrow's still going to connect, so we're good. Like I said, with the good comes the bad.
That boy is good.
Mm-hmm. Good and terrible.
This is not his first appearance here as the Randy Watson Award winner. Irv Smith Jr., it's interesting because before the fumble on the 3 yard line, they were utilizing him more. That was his third catch of the day. He only saw the ball once more the entire rest of the game, and that was a dump off on 3rd and 13, which he actually almost converted into a first. So that was almost a good play. But I think for the last time, he had and lost Burrow's trust. Are they going to deactivate? Like, is he going to be active on Sunday? We'll get in and we'll touch on news and notes here. In a second, but I think there's a strong chance he's not active on Sunday. I don't see the Bengals having 4 guys active. Do you?
It's hard to envision that he is going to be active. I think that's like the long shot at this point. With what they're, you know, with Hudson coming on, I mean, it seems like a long shot for Irv Smith to be active on Sunday to me.
And it's not without warrant. I mean, he's dropped passes. He hasn't, a couple times he's made, caught the ball, but hasn't been able to keep his feet in bounds. He can't get open, fumbled the ball on the 3 yard line. I mean, that was another drive when they were just marching downfield, and that's just stuff that you can't do. I mean, it's the fumble. It's hard to have ball security on that play. He kind of got spun around and was kind of had his back to the defender and someone came in, but whether it's something that's excusable or not, it's just another mistake. You know, just another demerit against your name. I mean, I would say 3 strikes and you're out, but you know, this is why you make sure you have every roster spot filled and you don't just throw some guy who's been decent when he's been healthy, but has problems staying healthy. And then clearly, you know, they are not going to neglect this position in this next offseason. I can guarantee you that. Yeah. So
hopefully, but when you, anytime you fumble inside the 10, that's on you. There's no, I mean, you can say it was a tough break. I mean, he got, you know, kind of turned around and hit from, it doesn't matter. He had one. Did he have 2 hands on the football? That would be a negative. And it was a play that was doomed from the very beginning, which I get. I mean, that play was never going to work. I get it. I'm not blaming Irv Smith that the play didn't get yards, but in that moment, in that play, all you could do was get down and not fumble the football. And he clearly wasn't super concerned about holding on to the football, which is insane to me inside the five on a play that you knew right away you weren't scoring. I mean, it wasn't going to, the play was not going to work. I mean, it was pretty much blown up from the get go. Two hands on the football, go to the ground. I mean, I thought that was egregious, in my opinion, when you're inside the 10 like that in a big time game on the road. Those are the kind of plays that lose you games. So I felt like that one was egregious and really was, could have been really damning to the Bengals' efforts, but fortunately they were able to overcome it.
Yeah, and absolutely. And it's, you know, you don't, when you lose trust, I mean, you're not going to win it back because you don't want that guy out there. You know, if there's a tight game, I mean, we're heading towards the back half of the season here and you get in the playoffs, is Burrow going to trust throwing to that guy? You know, even if he's wide open, if it's third and 10 and he's standing at the sticks, no one within 10 yards, is he going to throw him the ball? Or is he going to, you know, tuck right. it and force something or take a sack or, you know, or put it in, you know, put the ball in a spot to where he, you know, it could be intercepted just because he doesn't trust that guy. So I think there's a better than average chance that he's not active. They'll probably keep him around for depth. I'm not sure what they're going to do, and we'll get to it here. We'll get into news and notes here. The Bengals signed Tanner Hudson to the active roster, so now they have four tight ends. For a team that doesn't use a lot of tight ends that often, they don't use a lot of 12 personnel or 13 or anything like that. Mitch Wilcox and Drew Sample are special team stalwarts, and Drew Sample is he's the blocking fullback when they need a fullback. He's fantastic run blocker, pass blocker, so he's not losing his spot. Mitch Wilcox is a special teams staple. He's not losing his spot, so you just brought up Tanner Hudson, who's, you know, he's a receiving tight end, fourth year in the league, and people are overhyping him too much, but he should be able to, I mean, if he can give you CJ Uzomah-type production, and that's not asking much. CJ Uzomah was fine. If you can get that kind of production from Hudson for the rest of the season, you're going to be happy with it. And he's not, you know, he's not going to lose his spot. He's now on the active roster. So,
yeah, I mean, when the Bengals are working correctly with their tight ends, it's, you know, the tight end has four or five catches for 40 to 50 yards on nice third down conversions. You know, you're pressing the seam, you're opening things up for other people. It doesn't take a whole lot. Unfortunately, when you've gotten nothing from the position, then it gets pretty glaring pretty quickly. But I think Tanner Hudson will be just fine. Don't expect the guy to be, you know, George Kittle right off the rip or Travis Kelce right off the rip. I mean, he'll ease his way in, and I think he'll make some plays. But as long as he just makes the plays that are in front of him, he doesn't have to do too much. Just kind of stay in your lane, stay in your role, and he'll be fine.
Yeah. Trade deadline. Came and went on Tuesday, 4 o'clock. Bengals made no acquisitions. Again, as expected, we told you this. Everyone told you this. The Bengals just, they value their draft picks too much. They overvalue their own players. So even someone that, you know, like Jackson Carmen, that might have been a decent, you know, player for player swap, they're going to, you know, Duke Tobin looks too much to try to not win trades. He looks to absolutely obliterate trades. I mean, the BJ Hill for Billy Price trade, like, that's what he wants. He wants one where the guy's out of the league in 2 years while the guy he trades for is still a crucial piece of your team. So, on the positive side, go ahead.
That's not the worst thing, I guess. I mean, if you're going to go, you know, if you're going to make trades, make sure you win them, I guess. I mean, I guess that's there's worse things. You could be the Bears, you know?
Yeah. You know, like I was saying, no one from the division made any significant moves other than the Browns. They dealt Donovan Peoples-Jones to Detroit for a late pick, and that, you know, he wasn't very high on their depth chart anyway. The Bills brought in a back or a cornerback, just a depth piece. A bunch of other teams made some signings to kind of bolster, but not a lot of big moves, especially in the AFC. I don't think the Chiefs made anything late. I mean, they picked up. They picked up receiver a couple weeks ago, but at the deadline, there wasn't much. And the guys that went mostly were defensive guys that went for the NFC. So they did bring back good friend Clay Johnston back to practice squad. Akeem Davis-Gaithers, his injury is still lingering. in hindsight, again, yeah, they probably should have put him on IR. This is, God, this has been since week two, I think, since the injury occurred. So it's going to, that they're bringing him to the practice squad. He's probably going to be, Johnson's probably going to be elevated to play special teams on Sundays, my guess. It's probably still going to be another couple weeks, but not enough to put him on the IR again this late in the season. So they did put, again, we had Chase Brown going on the IR. That's the move to the, that's the open spot that they had for Tanner Hudson. They will still need to make a move at some point because Charlie Jones, they didn't open up his practice window yet. So apparently he's still a week or so away from being able to come back from his thumb injury. It'd be nice to have that guy back again on offense. Everybody's contributing. So it wouldn't be as, wouldn't be huge in the passing game, but just his return ability. I like Trenton Irwin, yeah, but I don't care for seeing him on punt returns. Again, catch it, put your hand up, catch it, and hand to the ref. He makes some moves, like he's kind of bobbled the ball a couple times on punts, like just, or just let it bounce, let it go, man.
Yeah, Charlie Jones just looks way too fluid when he's returning punts. I mean, he just looks very natural. So, just that comfortability is there.
Yeah, so, quick look at the AFC North standings. After everybody winning when the Bengals were off last or 2 weeks ago, everyone came back to earth a little bit outside of the Ravens. Steelers lost to the who did the Steelers lose to? I totally spaced out on that.
I watched the game too. Oh wow.
Old ages.
I watched the game.
Yeah, I was
I watched the game, I swear.
I was at Dave and Buster's watching the game. What in the holy smokes, man? I'm having to look it up. Jaguars. Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
The Jaguars.
That's correct.
Yeah. Mitch Trubisky was their leading passer. 130. Like that offense is tough to watch. And it is. Yeah, Kenny Pickett's going to be back. They're actually playing tonight against the Titans. He's going to be back, but I don't even know if that's a good thing or a bad thing because, I mean, at this point, is Mitch Trubisky the better option starting quarterback?
I don't know that there's a better option there, but
yeah, I mean, you know, it's a different option. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. So, lesser of two evils.
Yeah, exactly. You hate to see it. I mean, the Steelers having a bad offense, man, it's just,
yeah, it's too bad.
It hurts the soul. Speaking of bad offenses, Browns lost to Seattle in a game that was, it was kind of a weird game. The, Seahawks were up 14-0. And Browns were starting PJ Walker again. PJ Walker was not good. 15 of 31 for 248 yards, two interceptions, but they did battle back. They actually went ahead 20-17 at one point before Geno Smith let him back down through a touchdown to Smith and Jigba. But that's just another team with a bad offense. Again, like they're injured. Deshaun Watson is, I guess he's practicing this week and might be there, but he's not the savior. They were talking about looking for trying to trade for Jacoby Brissett, which tells you all you need to know about the state of their offense and their quarterback play.
Yeah.
Jacoby Brissett is like, if that's the guy that you're trading for, who's a fine backup, I guess, but not someone you really want starting games, at least long-term, like that tells you a lot about how awful the quarterback play is. Again, you hate to see it from a team that just has so much, you know, heart and just a bunch of good players to play for him. You know, it's just, it's awful to see that happen. So, but again, the Ravens did win. They beat the Cardinals a little bit closer than expected. They won 31-24. Jackson had a big, like kind of come down game where he was fantastic 2 weeks ago. He was 18-27 for only 157 yards. They did a lot of their damage on the ground, all three touchdowns by Gus Edwards. Again, Ravens are going to do what the Ravens do. They're going to look like absolute world beaters. They're going to go on a little 3-4 game run here and just beat the crap out of everybody like they did to Detroit. And then they're going to have games to where they look rough against a not so great Arizona, who's right now in, I think, the pole position for the number one pick. They're going to lose a couple games that they should win because that's just what they do. So. And they had their chance earlier in the year when the Bengals were injured, when the Bengals were playing poorly, and they didn't run with it. So that's on them. Yep. We appreciate them not taking care of business when they had a chance to. So Bengals are what, game and a half behind? Yeah. And game and a half?
Yeah.
Game and a half. Yeah, they're 6-2. Math is difficult. So again, Bengals are still in a good position. They need to start winning division games once they get back to that. They'll play the Bills or they'll play the Ravens again in a couple weeks, but
that game will be big.
Yeah, that'll be a huge game. That'll be in Baltimore, always a tough place to play, but Burrow's gone there. He's won there. He's thrown all over the field there. Jamar had a pretty good game there a couple years ago. I don't know if y'all remember the spin move that he put and absolutely ran to the house on that one. So it'd be great to see that one again.
No. That was awesome. That was an awesome play.
That's one of my top five greatest plays that I've ever seen. Might be outside of the Hubbard yard dash, whatever you want to call it, the rumble in the jungle last year in the playoffs against those awful Ravens again. That might be my second favorite play of the Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase era. So,
yeah.
Looking forward now, it is going week nine, game eight versus Buffalo on Sunday Night Football. I don't know if you have seen, and if you guys are on YouTube, if you guys have seen or not, but the Bengals have this awesome idea to stripe the jungle. They have each telling each section what color to wear, so that especially at night you're going to have areas that are orange, areas that are black. I think that's going to look awesome. I kind of wonder why they haven't thought of this before. I mean, the stadium's 24 years old, especially on a Sunday night. Like, that's going to be so cool. They've got special things planned. They've got a light show going before the game. They've got Kevin Huber and Clark Harris are the rulers of the jungle this week. And we all know how electric Paycor gets on, especially primetime games. And that place is going to be loud. That place is going to be live. It's going to be electric. Bengals are 4-0 in their last four home primetime games. Would have been 5-0. You can't project what was going to happen the last three quarters of the game against Buffalo last year, but they were looking really, really solid. And it's not a stretch to say that they were at least in the driver's seat to win that game. So.
Yeah, it looked the beginning of that game looked a lot like San Francisco. You just felt like everything was clicking.
Yeah,
in that Bills game.
Yeah, I mean the defense or offense ran down the field the first time, scored easily. Defense forced them to a field goal, and offense was driving again. So, It is the return of DeMar Hamlin. Maybe, not sure if he's even going to be active. I mean, he's still inactive a bunch. They've got good safeties in Hyde and Poyer. So it's not as if he's needed or anything, but he'll be there, and it'll be kind of a cool moment they're going to have with him and the UC medical team, and really emotional for him and everyone. So we'll see if all the kumbaya crap that went on with the Bengals and Bills fans after the game will return, or if it'll be back to all the vitriol and hatred after the ass kicking the Bengals put on them in the playoffs. So I think it'll be all warm and fuzzy until ball goes in the air, and then we back to proper hate. So I'm good with that.
Yeah. So,
onwards to our three offensive keys. I have key number one, an efficient run game. Again, they're not going to run the ball 30, 40 times and run it down another team's throat unless for whatever reason something happens to Burrow's arm or feet or whatever, or they're just being incredibly successful getting 7, 8, 9 yards a carry. But last week, Joe Mixon averaged nearly 5.5 yards a carry. And again, that's a lot of that has to do with them running the ball or playing under center. That just makes them more multiple, a lot less predictable in their offense. Again, I would love for them to incorporate Chris Evans. I mean, Trevion Williams is what he is. Supposedly Chase Brown was going to be getting more run and is supposed to be getting more opportunities, but then he had to go and pull his hamstring last week and go on IR, so he's gone until last handful of games. So again, I don't need him to run for 150, 200 yards, but an efficient run game. Burrow running the ball, he ran the ball really, really well on scrambles, called his own number on a quarterback draw on third down, which was great. So again, just be efficient, convert first downs. You don't need to rip off 30, 40, 50 yard runs. Just keep the chains moving, stay ahead of the chains, get 4 yards, just don't get bogged down, get stuffed for no gain on second and 10. That's the stuff that absolutely kills you. So second that we have. Oh, well, Shin, you came back. Okay. Sorry about that, Greg.
We're here.
Yeah, you're back. Second key that I have is the explosive passing game. And again, this kind of goes hand in hand with the injuries the Burrow had, not pushing the ball deep. Bengals are 31st in the league and with six total passing plays of 25 plus yards. One of those was last week. I think that's the next step in the evolution of the offense with Joe healthy. Again, an efficient run game helps with that. It's going to keep the safeties in. If you can do run play action to suck them up, you know, the linebackers up. And, you know, it's, do you feel, I mean, I know everyone's still safety. I mean, I would love to see a chart of how deep safeties play versus certain teams. I would have to think that safeties still play deeper against the Bengals than, you know, especially with Burrow back, deeper than anybody else. Just keeping, you know, keeping Jamar Chase, keeping T. Higgins from going deep on them. What do you think is the key to opening up the explosive pass game?
I think you've got it. If they can have an efficient run game, that's going to change everything. If Mixon can start, of course, we're not ever going to expect Mixon to run a 60, 70, 80 yard touchdown. But if Mixon can start getting some runs where he gets to the second level, and now those safeties are having to get smashed in the mouth a little bit, the only way to counteract that is to fill quicker from the safety position. You know, the sooner you fill, the easier that tackle is. So if you can get Joe Mixon to that second level, and it doesn't have to be 10 times a game, but if you can get him to that second level a couple of times, I think that will open up the explosive pass plays. But if I'm the Bengals, I'm also not panicking about you know, having to try to get these explosive plays. They will come. This is Field of Dreams all over again. If you build it, they will come. Well, we built it with Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase. And T. Higgins, these plays will come. I think the one big part of this is we really haven't seen T. Higgins break out yet. And when T. Higgins does break out, which is going to happen, I think it may just be this game. If T. Higgins does break out, well, now what do you do? What do you do with Jamar Chase? What do you do with some of these other guys, Yoshi even? I just think it's going to open up a lot of other things when T. gets back to being T. Not that all of, you know, this season's been on T's shoulders. I think a lot of it was the Burrow injury, and there was a lot of things that added up into it. But now that everything's rolling in the right direction, if T gets going, now it's really hard to kind of be the defensive coordinator. Where are you going to deploy your weapons to try to prevent this attack when you have Mixon efficiently running the ball? Joe Burrow able to scramble up the middle when you play man. If you double Jamar, now you got T running vertically, making plays. I mean, you can just see very quickly how one or two little things changes this offense in a way that makes it very scary.
Yeah, and I mean, we're seven games in. T. Higgins only has 19 catches for 218 yards at 11.5 a pop. His injury, you know, hasn't helped. Burrow not being able to push the ball. I mean, T. Higgins isn't the underneath guy. He's not the slot guy that Burrow was pretty much primarily relying on so much in the early going of the season. So with Burrow returning to health and with Higgins returning to health and with them being able to push the ball more, yeah, I mean, it's got to be coming. T. Higgins just all of a sudden didn't become just another guy playing wide receiver. Again, right. I would love to see them put Higgins on one side and Yoshi on the other side in a four wideout spread. And I haven't paid too much attention to see how much they've had that and just have them both run vertical. Like, you're pressing the safety. So either, you know, they're going to take a safety off of Chase to watch Yoshi going deep. Probably not. So you're going to have him under or over the top. And if they do, then you got Chase and Boyd underneath. And I would love to, you know, obviously, I mean, everyone's got, you know, players that, you know, wide receivers, they can all do different stuff. And Bengals have an idea of what they're doing. They know what they're doing better than I do. But I just think that would be a fun little wrinkle for them to throw in a handful of more times. I think we talk about, you know, we're talking about tight ends and trust. I think Yosefus has absolutely earned their trust. Besides the fact, you know, he's proven he can get open in the red zone. And, you know, I mean, those are tough places to get open. You only have so much real estate to work with. He's an absolute hard-nosed blocker. You see him as a gunner on punt returns. I mean, he's done everything they've asked of him. So I think he's going to make a bigger role. Again, as a sixth rounder, again, we're known for our Yoshi love, but as a sixth rounder who was supposed to be a project, I would love for them to carve out more of a role. Cause I just think that helps everybody else out. Everyone that you put out there that can be looked at as a weapon, that's one fewer set of eyes that are looking at, you know, looking at your stars. And maybe that opens up, maybe that opens up more for Mixon because, you know, you've got the safeties playing back. So, we shall see. I think the explosive pass game is coming again. They're not going to be what they were in 21 because teams just aren't going to let them just throw over the top on them all day long. But they need to get better because, again, they've done a good job of, you know, especially these last few weeks as Burrow's kind of returned, of working their way down the field, you know, in 10, 12 play drives. But you can't rely on 10, 12, 14 play drives all game long. You need to be able to pick up 40, 50 yards. You know what I mean? Then have a four play drive that goes 75 yards for a touchdown and, or, you know, go 80 yards, on, you know, 80 yards on one play. And they're not going to get that running the ball. They haven't had that running the ball. And God, yeah. I mean, when was the last time they had a touchdown run for, you know, that was 70, 80 yards, Jeremy Hill.
True.
Those guys.
Yeah.
They're due.
It's definitely been a long while.
Yeah. It's been a long, long while. Third key that we have is to employ Hudson. Again, Bengals aren't going to feature Tanner Hudson, but I think just making sure that utilize him in the pass game. Again, he's the only one who's shown that he's had any separation and the ability to catch the damn ball. If he can run down the seam a few times, again, it opens up more for everyone. Just do what Hurst and CJ Uzama did. Just make yourself, you know, find a way to get yourself open and just catch the ball when they actually throw it to you.
Don't need an all-pro performance from Tanner Hudson, but if you can have two or three first down catches on third and mediums, you know, then you're absolutely filling a role that we haven't seen from Irv Smith at all. So it doesn't take a whole lot if he can just get a little bit done. If he can just get something done, some important third down catches. I think the team is craving a tight end to kind of rally around. And I think Tanner Hudson's in that perfect spot where if he can just make a couple plays, he'll earn trust in a hurry.
Well, and especially the last couple of years, Bengals, and this might be more of the team over anything being emphasized, CJ Uzama and Hayden Hurst were both just absolute energy guys. Yeah. Uzama was the hype man in 2021. I mean, he was the whole, you know, he was the whole why not us guy at the pep rally before the Super Bowl. I mean, he walked out with, you know, with crutches and then threw him away like he was a wrestler, you know, like a wrestler, and just the guy, you know, to get everyone up and running. And Hayden Hurst was the exact same guy. I mean, there was the play last year, again, in the short time frame of the Bengals-Bills game last year in the regular season, caught the ball, ran over, I think it might have been Hamlin at that point, had about a 15-20 yard reception, and just jumps up and like absolutely just full of energy. And they haven't had that, you know, the handful of catches that their tight ends have had, like, they don't have that. Mixon is kind of the energy guy, but they're missing that juice, just the fiery guy. So again, just do that. Just make a handful of catches and be fiery and just, you know, be a threat, be someone that, you know, the defense has to keep an eye on. So speaking of defense, now for the three defensive keys, if you want to, Greg, you want to present these?
Yep. I think first with frustrate Diggs, I think this is number one. Cause as you've watched the Bills over the last couple years, anytime Diggs gets frustrated, the Bills lose. And it's not like we're talking about one or two times this has happened. This has happened handfuls of times. Now, I think, you know, a little bit of that is going to be Cam Taylor-Britt. Go be a dog and let's shut Diggs down early. But also, I think defensive game plan, I would plan to double Diggs or shade him with coverage early just to get that frustration building. So I would make sure that he's not going to have a three catches for 30 yards in the first quarter just on some, you know, some deep curl or an easy hitch route. I would not let him get going like that. I would put that in my defensive game plan to make sure that he doesn't get rolling, because he's shown the ability to be frustrated. And why not? Let's go ahead and do it. Bills aren't playing the greatest of football right now. So I feel like it'll be something that the Bengals can get done and should get done and should be priority number one, because there really aren't any other weapons on the Bills that make you go, whoa, okay, this guy's a dude. Other than Stephon Diggs, everybody else, not saying they're not good, but nobody's explosive like Diggs. So I think if you can just keep him from getting excited early, I think you really, really benefit yourself. Easier said than done, of course. He's a very talented player, but hopefully the Bengals can keep him off the stat sheet for the first quarter, and then it I feel like the Joker and Batman, away we go. And now we just get to watch as Stephon Diggs blows up. The second one is getting Allen's face, and I feel like, you know, this is always going to be a key for our Bengals defense. We've got to be able to get to the quarterback, and they've done a pretty good job of it. So getting in Allen's face, and we all know how the Josh Allen saga goes. When he's under duress, he becomes a mixture of Brett Favre and Superman without the invincibility. I mean, he really thinks he can do whatever he wants. So if we can get Josh Allen into some spots where he's trying to make superhero plays, that's a good thing for us, as long as those plays are with his arm and not with his legs. I think that'll benefit the Bengals. We want him winging the ball around in bad spots. So a couple stats on Josh Allen. When he's been totally clean in the pocket this year, 9 touchdowns to 3 interceptions. That's a pretty good ratio, 3-to-1 ratio. When he's pressured, it's been 8 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. So you can clearly see the numbers bear this out. When he pushes the ball when he's pressured. So when he's pressured, he's going to take that monster shot down the field. I think it comes down to 11.9 yards average distance throw to 7.7 when he's not pressured. So clearly, I mean, that's almost a 5-yard difference from pressured to not pressured. That's a big difference. I mean, that is seriously a massive number for 5 yards an attempt. That really is kind of a glaring number. When I saw this number, I was kind of a little bit blown away when I saw it was almost 5 yards. That is really a gross disparity. So let's get him in pressure. Let's let him throw the ball vertically down the field, which plays perfectly into the Bengals' hands. If you talk about the number one attribute of our secondary, the first thing that comes to my mind is speed. Well, the farther the ball's thrown, the more time it's in the air, the more our speed can matter. So I just think pressuring him, having him throw those deep balls, trying to be Superman, is exactly what we want. Turnover-worthy plays triple when he is pressured. Triple. Turnover-worthy plays triple when he's pressured. Again, I think it fits in that Bengals secondary with our speed. I think this all plays right into exactly what the Bengals kind of are and want to be. So all this is good stuff for the Bengals. The key is they just have to get to Allen. So, you know, you can talk about it, you can do all that stuff, but you've got to get pressure on Allen. He's always been a gambler. We've talked about that. He's careless when he enters hero mode. So let's make him enter hero mode, and I'll feel really, really good about the Bengals defense at that point, because then we can just kind of unleash the dogs, which kind of gets me into my final point, which is squash the run, which I think happens in a couple different ways. One way is we get Josh Allen into hero mode. Josh Allen gets into hero mode, and he wants to throw the ball. Josh Allen is not somebody that wants to hand the ball off 30 times. When he feels like it's time to go get it, he's going to go get it. He's not going to give the ball to James Cook. It's just not going to happen. He wants the ball in his hands. The other part of squashing the run is, and I think this is where you kind of get to team football. Can we play complementary football? Get the lead. When you get the lead against the Bills, they abandon the run like it was never even invented. Like it was never a thing. So the Bengals have got to find a way. Really, the script from the last game that never got completed: get a 7-3 lead, drive back down, get a 14-3 lead, and all of a sudden the run game will be gone. So if we can do that, then I think we'll be in really good shape. The other thing I wanted to touch on with Josh Allen, he's not running the ball nearly as much this year, which not only is he not running it as much, he's not been as efficient when he does run it. So keep him, get pressure on him. That squashes the run game. He starts playing hero ball. Josh Allen hasn't shown the willingness this year. I don't know if it's him or the organization, maybe a little bit of both, that he doesn't want to run quite as much. I think that's kind of his next evolution, and people have been talking about it for 5 years, that was going to be his next evolution. So don't fear the Josh Allen run as much as maybe we normally would have. They're not calling run plays for Josh Allen like they used to. Quarterback power for them, quarterback counter, they were all about that. I mean, they would call that 3, 4, 5 times a game. Now he's nowhere near that. I have the numbers here. Only 14 design runs for Josh Allen this year in 8 games, which is less than 2 carries a game designed runs, which is amazing. And crazy. He's not been efficient either. 14 carries for 31 yards. So when he has ran it, it has not been good. So I think that is something to pay attention to early on in the game. Are they calling design runs for Josh Allen? If they are, the Bills have really come in with a different game plan and something that they feel like they have to do to win this game. So if you see them come out with design Josh Allen runs early, I think that's actually a good sign for the Bengals. That tells me that the Bills don't feel like they can win this game running their base offense. So that's something I would keep an eye out as a fan, just kind of look for it. Because if it happens, I think that's kind of telling of what the Bills coaching staff thinks about how good the Bengals are or where the Bengals are at.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the game plan should be pretty similar to how the Bengals, what the Bengals had last week. Again, I mean, it's very similar. Brock Purdy, when he was pressured, put the ball in harm's way a lot. And Josh Allen, I mean, that's been his entire knock. They shut down McCaffrey pretty well. I mean, he had 12 carries for 54 yards. Yeah, I mean, that's 4.5 yards a pop, but that's, for Christian McCaffrey to hold him for 50, I mean, he wasn't even the leading rusher. Brock Purdy was leading rusher for the Niners last week.
Yeah. Well, and really going back, I mean, I feel like this is actually 3 weeks in a row because we kind of had the same kind of deal with Geno Smith. Get pressure on Geno. He struggled with pressure and stopped the run game with Kenneth Walker, and they were fairly able to do that. So I think they've just continued. This defense has continued to build, and that's exactly what you want to see from a defense. A defense doesn't step in day one, week one. Okay, we're ready to go. Defenses, you just kind of slowly progress throughout the season. The bad defenses are the ones where you're just not good enough to stop this, and now that becomes an issue, and you have to employ extra defenders there. The Bengals don't have that issue. Right now, they have the talent and the ability to stop everything. It's just putting it all together, and I think we're getting to that point. So I'm very happy with where the Bengals' defense is at, and I'm very happy with where it's headed.
Yeah, and this is, Bengals' problem earlier in the season was missed tackles. They only missed 4 tackles last week. I think they only missed 5 tackles the week before against Seattle. And you're seeing these, especially in the secondary, these kids, they're not making mistakes. I think 2 weeks ago, most of the missed tackles were actually by the defensive line. I think that's the same. Yeah, I'm looking at the numbers right now. The missed tackles were by the line. So, Cam Taylor-Britt isn't missing tackles on the outside. Not as many plays are getting there. I think the line's doing a better job. The defensive line's doing a better job holding up, and letting the linebackers clean up. And, Logan Wilson and Jermaine Pratt are, they're going to make plays. Like, they're not out there missing a ton of tackles. Bengals are, I think, second in turnover margin and second in total turnovers. They just absolutely, secondary, and for that matter, Logan Wilson, they're getting opportunities to get their hands on the ball and they're taking advantage. Logan Wilson has the most interceptions by a linebacker in the NFL since 2020. He's got 10 of them. We know Jermaine Pratt makes big plays. I mean, the interception that he had on Sunday was ridiculous. He just got his mitt there, got his hands on it, tipped it to himself and brought it down. And if he could have kept his feet, he would have had probably a 90-yard touchdown run if he had one more yard of real estate on the sidelines. So again, this is a game. If I think the Bengals will be content letting Josh Allen scramble. I mean, you don't want to have him keep picking up key third downs, but it's, you know, he's not running as well as he was. He's not Lamar Jackson. He's not going to break it, you know, break the 75 yarder by putting somebody in the spin cycle like Lamar Jackson did Nick Vigil back in the days. They keep playing that. Oh, yeah. Like they like playing that replay, even though literally nobody is still around from that team.
Oh, they play it all the time. That was one of my lowest moments as a Bengals fan. I'm not going to lie. That move like literally hurt my soul. I remember when that happened, and I don't remember what I had in my hand, but I threw something at the wall very aggressively. That one, I felt like an inferior person to anybody that lived in Baltimore at that moment. I was not happy when that went down. But the other guy I do want to give a little credit to is that I feel like is really starting to play well, and I feel like he really is kind of a glue guy for the defense, is Mike Hilton. I feel like he's really turned it on the last couple weeks, and as he goes, the defense, you know, kind of goes with it. He made some massive plays in the Seattle game. I just feel like he's really starting to play well and gives the Bengals a whole different dynamic. Just because him shooting off the edge, he plays the run game. He just does everything so well when he's playing well that he's hard to replace.
Yeah, he had the big interception against the Seahawks in the red. Yeah, it was red zone interception 3 weeks ago. Just looking at Pro Football Focus grades, his three highest graded games are the last 3 weeks. He was poor the first handful of weeks. Wasn't even that great against Arizona, but had an 80 grade against Seattle, 91.7 grade against San Francisco. One of the top 10 highest graded defenders in the entire league per their grading measurement, and his coverage has been a lot better. I think they're doing a better job of kind of mitigating him, especially now that they've got DJ Turner, and they're still kind of rotating Turner and Awuzie, as Awuzie still isn't. I don't know if he's not healthy or he's struggling. Like, I'm gonna assume he's struggling just because he's still, you know, I mean, he had major knee surgery less than a year ago. They're, you know, able to use Turner more. So Hilton gets beat when he has to play big guys, and he gets beat when he has to play really fast guys because he's really small and not fast. But I think Lou's doing a lot better job of utilizing him. And yeah, I mean, he's completely turned his game around. And as that guy goes, the defenses definitely seem to follow. So absolutely think that, you know, that those keys are, if they can hit two out of three of those keys, I think they're in really, really good shape. So,
completely agree.
So, and again, like we were talking about, you're talking about how they, Bills will completely just stop running the ball. When they played the Jags, they got behind 11-0 in the fourth quarter, in the first quarter, and completely abandoned it. They ran the ball 14 times the entire game. That's one drive of runs by the Ravens, 14 right there. So, yeah, if you can, you make them one dimensional. And when you make them one dimensional, then you want Josh Allen to throw the ball 40, 50 times because he's going to put the ball in harm's way. And I hate saying we when we're talking about, you know, even though they're our favorite team, I hate saying we, but Bengals have so many players that are opportunistic. They're, you know, they're making the plays, they're making the picks. I mean, we, you know, Logan Wilson, Cam Taylor-Britt had a couple interceptions. DJ Turner is due for his first one. So I really think it bodes well if they can make them just get up 14-3 by the start of the second quarter, and they become one-dimensional easily. So,
yeah.
It is prediction time. And we, again, have our friends of the other two shows. We have our good buddy Nate Dotson and Tim Daniel come with their prediction. So we'll have Nate here give his prediction.
So it looks like the dirty Buffalo Bills are coming into Cincinnati for some Sunday night football. And I am predicting a Bengals bloodbath. Boys are going to dominate, keep the momentum going. It's going to be a big day from T. Higgins, 100-plus and a tutty. And I got the final score being Cincinnati 33, Buffalo 17.
Nate, I love it. Bengals almost doubling up on them. that almost seemed like it was like a wrestling promo the way that he went in there, which was pretty damn awesome. I think we need to work and get some more production in there. And I told him I'm going to just put a pencil in a black mustache so I look like Mean Gene and work some promos. He needs to, I know he's in Virginia while the rest of us are in Cincinnati. He needs to come here so we can cut some of those promotions, because those would be friggin' hilarious to throw on our show. So
for our younger crowd, if you're not sure about Mean Gene, just holler at us one day. We'll fill you in. Yeah, we'll get you filled in.
Look him up. It's 2023. You should know how to use Google. And
that's true.
Or YouTube. You're on YouTube. You're watching us. Go look up Mean Gene, the greatest commentator, interviewer. I don't even know what, you know, greatest, we'll say celebrity, non-wrestling celebrity. So. Yeah. All right, now on to Tim Daniel pick.
Sunday Night Football. Stripe the stadium. Paycor is gonna be wild. The Buffalo Bills come to town. No problems, no concerns for Joe Shiesty and the crew. The Bengals keep the win streak going. They get another huge win at home on Sunday Night Football. 28-20, Bengals beat the Bills. Joe Burrow, 280, two tutties. Ja'Marr Chase with one, T. Higgins with one. Let's ride.
I like it. Tim's predicting Burrow to have a similar stat line to what he had last week. He had three touchdowns last week, but similar yardage. I think that's all well within their own possibility. He's got them at 28-20. My turn. I've got a Scorigami. I don't know how it's going to happen. For those that don't know, Scorigami is when there's a score that has never happened before. So there has never been a 32-19 final score in NFL history. Again, I don't know how it's going to happen, but it's going to happen. Offense is going to feed. Defense is going to, we'll say, four sacks on Josh Allen, two turnovers. He's going to fumble once. He's going to throw it to DJ Turner. He's going to get his first interception. Bengals are going to roll 32-19. I'm going to say Burrow throws three touchdown passes. Again, Mixon's efficient. He'll run for 75, 80 yards. Nobody's going to break a big run because nobody breaks a big run, but it's going to be a comfortable fourth quarter at Paycor. Again, stadium's going to be striped. It's going to be electric. Greg, what do you got for us?
I've got final score Bengals 28, Bills 24. I think we're all kind of on the same page. I think the Bengals, they're going to have an easy fourth quarter, but I think it's Sunday Night Football, and when there's 2 minutes left on the clock, it will be a one-score game somehow, some way. I think the Bills kind of chip away late. I think the Bengals take a big lead early. Bills maybe get a late touchdown, backdoor kind of touchdown thing, and then Bengals run the clock out. I can easily see the Bengals being up by two scores mid to late fourth quarter, and then the Bills cutting it down to make it 28-24. It's Sunday Night Football. NFL is going to have a close matchup, so I've got Bengals 28, Bills 24.
You're not saying that the league would step in and try to introduce drama by certain ways, would you?
No, never. Never.
I think they're leaning into that script thing too hard to kind of throw off the threads. It's all scripted, as they're saying sarcastically. No, it actually probably is scripted.
Right.
The whole thing about the backdoor score late, that sounds a little kinky, but, you know, again.
There's two people. So you have the gamblers who are thinking backdoor cover, and then, you know, the rest of us, I guess, where it's you know, a little kinky.
We have our issues here. It's okay. Any final thoughts before we get out of here for the week, Greg?
I do have a couple final thoughts. First off, we were talking about the Bengals, how they never make trades and they overvalue draft picks, which, you know, I think we all kind of agree with. But if we're gonna, you know, not bash them, but if we're gonna say that we don't love that, we got to give them credit when credit's due. So I think it's time to just look back at the Bengals draft real quick and really give them credit for what so far has been a pretty incredible draft board. Miles Murphy, first round, obviously we're still waiting to see. DJ Turner, that's a great pick. Jordan Battle has been a good pick. Charlie Jones has been a good pick. Chase Brown, still wait to see, but I have high hopes for Chase Brown. Yoshi, I don't need to say anything. You guys know that I love Yoshi, so that's been a phenomenal pick. Brad Robbins is your starting punter. I mean, this is going right down the list, guys. These are all valuable players to the Bengals in 2023, and this was a good football team before the draft. So the Bengals really did a great job in the draft, and then in the seventh round, DJ Ivy out of Miami. I mean, we just went through that whole list, and all those guys are important. How many teams have their fifth, sixth, seventh round picks on the roster on a winning football team? I do think we have to give the Bengals front office some credit for the draft that they put together. And I know they never make moves at the deadline. I hate it as much as anybody. But if you're not going to make moves at the deadline and you're always going to hold on to your picks, this is what your draft should look like. You better get it right. And I'll give them credit. They've gotten it right. And then my final thought is we lost an icon yesterday in Bob Knight. Met him on an airplane flying back from Vegas to Cincinnati. He was coming into town to do the UNLV Cincinnati game. And he was sitting right in front of me on the airplane. Was a super nice guy. All-time legend of college basketball. So sad to see him go. Rest in peace, Bob Knight.
I'll leave my thoughts about Bob Knight alone. He's made some comments about women, and he's done some stuff. But for his family and those that love him, yes, rest in peace. Bengals were in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, in the AFC Championship last year. Brought in 8 draft picks. All 8 of them are on the roster. 5 of them are contributors. I think the only people are going to press the fact that Murphy hasn't made a big contribution. They didn't draft him with the intent of him making a big contribution this year. I understand. It would have been nice for them to get somebody who would have been more of a instant impact guy. I don't know who they would have picked. Maybe, I mean, Sam Laporta, but first round tight ends, early pick tight ends rarely work out. So when you're drafting in the back of the first round, you're not getting an instant impact guy. And if it is, it's someone who's got a lot lower ceiling. So, they absolutely knocked it out of the park on the draft. Only the last thing I have here is, and I'll put it on banner here. Good luck, Lloyd High School. Greg, you guys have a big game on Friday against Fleming County. Fleming County, and was that Flemingsburg?
Nope. I have no idea what they are. See, you got me all excited.
Got you all turned about. Somewhere in the middle of Kentucky. But again, good luck to you and your boys on Friday. I know you guys are gonna kill it. Keep the season going, kick some ass, Seabass.
Yes.
Before we get out of here, again. Any questions, comments for us, email us at team@riverfrontcincy.com. Again, if you're watching us, please like and subscribe. If you're listening to us on Apple, on Spotify, whatever, give us a rating. If you guys love us, tell a friend. If not, shut your damn dirty mouth. Outside of that, guys, we will see you all on... probably not going to have a show on Sunday because they're playing at 8:30, and I'm not staying up until midnight to come and talk to you guys. I have sleep. I have kids that have to get up way too damn early. So outside of that, guys, everyone have a good week.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.